matter what people say. We got it going on. Who cares about what they think?
You know me, I'm the hottest in the street.
WJMS. This is According to RP.
Turn up the volume, kick back, and get raw with us.
From the latest hip hop beats, to social issues that cripple the black community, all from the perspective of a young, strong black woman.
A strong black woman.
And now your host, Rita.
Welcome back, everyone, for another episode of According to RP on WJMS Radio. It's your girl, Rita Pierre, your host. And as always, I hope you guys are having a wonderful, wonderful week so far. I keep saying that I'm going to change that little phrase. So you guys know that our new night is on Sunday. So I really want to say I hope you guys are getting ready for the week to come. That's supposed to be the new saying, but it's been almost a year that I was on Thursday night saying I hope you guys are having a wonderful week so far. So please bear with me as I try to adjust myself to the new night. But I hope you guys had a great weekend so far. I know today is Sunday, weekend's pretty much over, but I hope you guys took advantage of the gorgeous weather that was going on here in New York City. And so today we have a really, really great guest that's going to be part of our show today. He goes by the name of Emmanuel Depa. Well, that's his government name. I don't know what his tag name is. I should have asked him. But his name is Emmanuel Depa, Esquire. He is an attorney based out of New York City. He primarily does immigration work, but he also dibbles and dabbles in other fields. So he's going to come on just to talk about himself a little bit, his solo practice, the different areas he focuses on, and also a little bit of, I guess, information on immigration law and what's going on. You know, recently we've been hearing so much about ICE agents back in the streets, and you know, just kind of a little talk about what that is, what's really going on, maybe what some of the projections are for immigration the next maybe year or two, especially with TPS. There was such a big talk about TPS these last couple of years, but now we haven't really heard so much about it. Like, unless you're in the immigration world, this is coming up on your radar all the time. But for those of us who might not be in the immigration world, you know, sometimes we're kind of like, oh, whatever happened to this movement? Whatever happened to this cause? What happened to TPS? What's going on? Especially since some deadlines have already, come up, right? I think there was a deadline for the Haitian TPS for July, and we're in July. So there's a lot of questions, and hopefully we can get some answers. So you definitely want to tune in, keep it locked to this station, as Emmanuel just takes us on a little journey about who he is and what he does for a living. So today, you know, we're going to get into our preliminaries. So it is now time for the Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
May I have the definition?
What does skeet skeet mean?
What's on fleek?
Can you use it in a sentence?
Hop in with fleek, Gillette.
And it's gonna be lit.
Major key.
It's time for the Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
So this week's Urban Dictionary word of the week is hunty. So I know many of you guys have either heard this term or have used this term. So this one, usually when I get on my UrbanDictionary.com soapbox, there are a lot of these words where I'm like, where the hell did they come from? Who submitted these terms? Like, they don't make sense. But hunty, I've actually heard before. I don't think I've ever used it personally. So hunty, an amalgamate of honey and cunty, a demeaning term without being overly aggressive. Example, don't be jealous because my hair is laid, hunty. Now, what I found to be very interesting with this, every time I've heard it, though, I mean, I've seen the little, like, in some instances, I could sense maybe a little shade with it, like, hunty, okay, hunty. But in a lot of other, I guess, I don't know, context is that I've heard this, I've seen it as kind of like a term of endearment. Like, okay, girl, okay, hunty. You know, like, I've never seen it in some, like, in this negative light. Like, this definition suggests that hunty is pretty much a slight without you knowing it. It's like an undercover, underground, low-key dig. And that's interesting. So it's saying that it's a mix of honey and cunty. So I don't know what cunty means. So then I had to go to Urban Dictionary again to clarify the definition of hunty. And so cunty here is used as an adjective used to describe a person's mood, especially when they are acting like a bitch on the rag. Oh my gosh. Example, hey, Tommy, quit acting so effing cunty. So now I feel like my whole perspective on this word hunty has been shifted. Like, I've heard this before. I feel like people might have even used it towards me. But again, I've seen it as such, like, as some sort of term of endearment, like a okay girl, like a little sassy you go girl type thing. But now I feel like I'm going to have to be, you know, extra vigilant when people use the word hunty, especially towards me. Now I'm going to be asking questions. Like, I don't know. I feel like I'm so confused now. I feel like I'm so confused. And now I'm going to be looking at people twice when they use this term, because now I'm empowered, because that's what I'm here to do, empower you all with these definitions. Because a lot of times we think that we know what these words mean and we're using them and we're accepting them on us. And then you find out that these words are actually digs. People are throwing digs at you with a smile. And I think that's what's been going on with the word hunty. So for those of you out there who have been victim of this word hunty, I would urge you to reevaluate the friendship or relationship with the individual who keeps hurling this term towards you. You're welcome. So now it's time for my favorite section of the show. It is time for the big up of the week. Watch it. Can you feel big up, big up? All of the woman them big up, big up. All of the girl them big up, big up. All of the woman them big up, big up. So this week's big up of the week goes to a trio. I don't know if they have a name. They actually don't have a name. But either way, the creators of the Straight Up series. So recently, when I say recently, I really mean yesterday, I was fortunate to be part of this wonderful panel that was held in Brooklyn within one of our SDA Seventh-day Adventist churches. And the purpose of this panel was to discuss the topic of sexual assault in general, and also sexual assault more specifically within the churches. And it was a really amazing discussion, because we got to talk about relevant issues, relevant factors within, I guess, this larger context. So how culture plays in, you know, sexual harassment and sexual assault, how religion plays in sexual assault and sexual harassment, etc. And so the panel was really rich. You know, we had individuals who had worked on college campuses as, you know, resident assistants, talking about their experiences with students, you know, being victims of sexual assault or sexual harassment. We had sexual abuse counselors on the panel. Myself, I was on the panel, just talking about my legal experience with it, and also personal experiences, especially being a Haitian American that grew up in the Seventh-day Adventist churches. So I was able to weigh in on several, you know, factors. I'm also a parent. And so it was a really great experience, and it was really lovely to see that there were people who were willing to listen and really willing to share. And so the group, Ariel Vudgali and Mitsuka, these are the three individuals who came together to put this, series together. You know, I really love when I see young people. I mean, I'm young too. I still consider myself a spring chicken. I'm not that old. But, you know, these people are like in their 20s. So, but it's really great to see young people really take, you know, take a cause and run with it. You know, a lot of times people, you know, they'll have a one-off discussion. They'll have a panel. You know, people are often motivated to do good. But the problem is support. Like for myself, I've done some of these events throughout the years, and, you know, thank God I've been able to get support from friends and family to do these events. But a lot of times you have people who are willing to do these things, to really just speak out on issues and to hold forums and to hopefully take next steps. but they have no support. And so what I like about this trio is that they've come together initially. Like they've, you know, it wasn't like one person was trying to do something and then it was like, okay, let me try to get two other people to join the team. Like they came together strong to, you know, be able to tackle the issue, do the work, and ensure that there's follow-up on it as well, too. Because, again, you have conversations. It's great to at least start it. But then what are you going to do afterwards? And so from this panel discussion, from this meeting, there was a lot of gems that were dropped. And there was also a lot of just, solutions. It was almost like a think tank in a sense, because there were individuals who were asking questions that led to, you know, why is it that many churches do not have protocols for handling sexual assault and sexual harassment in churches? Why is it that there is not some sort of like system in place? Why aren't there counselors, like mental health practitioners on staff in each church for, you know, incidents like sexual assault or sexual harassment or in general? I mean, and so it definitely opened up the conversation for future talks in a sense. I think that each of the different points that were brought up deserves its own panel discussion, deserves its own, meeting in a sense or whatever, however you want to call it. But either way, the big up of the week goes to these three individuals, because it's not easy trying to live your life, live your best life, go to school, work, and then try to be community centered, as you know, and focused. I can't talk today, etc. So big up to them. I look forward to seeing, you know, the work that these three individuals continue to do in the community, because it is important work. And I encourage all of you all who are listening to encourage your young people, encourage them when they have these ideas, when they want to do these events, when they want to, you know, do community projects, encourage them, be a part of it, assist them even, lend your expertise, because at the end of the day, they're still young. And so, you know, if you have some wisdom that you can impart on them, do so. That's the only way we'll be able to move forward in this society, is if we all work together, both young, old, and in the middle. So with every high, you guys know there is a low. And this week's low has been in the news for a little bit. When I say a little bit, I mean like maybe a week or two. But the tragedy of the slaying of Elijah. I guess his last name is Al-Amin. So I don't know if you guys have heard of this story. It's the story of a young boy, 17 years old, by the name of Elijah El-Amin, who was slain, who was violently murdered by a 27-year-old Michael Adams. And apparently the cause of all of this was that Elijah was playing his rap music a little too loud around a Circle K. And Adams happened to be there and felt like, well, I think his exact quotes to police officers were that people who listen to rap music are a threat to him and his community. And so he took it upon himself to slit the throat of 17-year-old Elijah, who Adams admitted did not provoke him. He did not feel threatened by Elijah, but the fact that he was listening to rap music was enough for him to feel like he needed to end Elijah's life. Now, the thing here is, you know, Adams is obviously in police custody. He's been charged with first degree murder, but he has already come up with the infamous insanity defense. We all know that this is a tool that is used in these streets when things are getting a little out of control. When you've been caught, you claim that you are mentally insane, that you have a mental illness, etc. Now, you know, the thing with mental illness, I'm always very weirded out by these, you know, claims, because it takes away from the actual, I don't know, movement of promoting mental health awareness within our communities. Like if everybody's going to run and say that, oh, I have a mental illness when they commit a crime, like I feel like it takes away from the people who actually need the resources, the people who are actually suffering from mental illness. I just find that it's crazy that, you know, I mean, let me not say it's crazy. I understand why somebody would do it. I would be, you know, we would be, I guess, I don't know. We'd be fooling ourselves if we would sit here and say, oh man, people are using the insanity defense. Like, why would they do that? I mean, why would they not? You're facing life in prison, or depending on what state you're in, the death penalty. Of course, you're going to start pulling out all sorts of rabbits out of all sorts of hats. But I think it's the way that the media runs with it sometimes that makes me a little upset. Like, for example, if it's a black person that were to do this, that were to slit a white person's throat because he was tired of him playing Billy Ray Cyrus and, I don't know, other genres of, and other country musics or alternative musics or whatever it is that white people music, I don't know. If it was a black person who were to slit the throat of a white man because he was listening to acid rock, you know, I don't know if the media would be so quick to be saying, oh, you know, 27-year-old, you know, Tommy Jones had mental illness when he committed this crime. Like, you rarely ever hear the mental illness aspect pushed when it comes to black people. But when it comes to white people, that's the first thing. You know, you have people who are shooting up schools, killing, you know, killed like, I don't know, 50, 60 individuals, cold-blooded. And the first thing that you see in the media when it comes to, you know, little Timmy is you see images of him in second grade, you know, slipping down a slide. You see images of him and his family on a family vacation somewhere in Colorado. I don't know. But when it comes to the black kid, you know, you see, I don't know, they pulled his one marijuana record from, like, I don't know, 3 years ago, or, you know, that one time he got into a fight at school, like, they pull that up. Meanwhile, the kid is like straight A's on his way to college. You know what I mean? So it's that same rhetoric that's just, I don't know, but it's really tragic because it's just another example, as I always say, of how this country is clearly not fair and how white people do whatever the hell they want. And I'm interested to see how far this actually goes in terms of this first degree murder charge. I mean, I don't even know. There's really no justice, you know, in this society. I mean, we try to do the best that we can. When I say we, I mean, I don't know. I don't even know who we stands for anymore. Those of us who, I guess, I don't know, have the power to make some sort of change. We try to do the best that we can with what we have. But at the end of the day, you know, when you turn on the TV or you flip on your social media and you see hashtags justice for Elijah, and you're like, man, another hashtag, another black kid. And this time it's because he was playing rap music. Like, and then it makes you think on another level, like, wow, I know my son loves rap music. He loves that trap stuff. He loves that, you know, that type of music that can now get you killed in these streets. And it's like, that could be anybody. I mean, this was in the Circle K, which is some sort of, like, is, I guess it's kind of like one of those I don't know, like Quickie Marts or whatever it is. Like, that's what that was. Like, this kid went there just to, I don't know if he went to go get something, some snacks. I don't know what he was there for. But it's crazy that his playing rap music, that's the only reason why. And it wasn't even like the guy shot him, right? Or punched him. I would understand if this guy went over and punched him, maybe. Like, well, I would still think it would be egregious to do so. But, yo, I don't know, something. But you slit his throat? Like, I feel like there's a level of premeditation in there. Like, where was this knife? Where did you grab this knife to then walk over to this young man to slit his throat? You know what I mean? Like, it's, I don't know. I have no idea. I guess we'll find out. We'll find out if maybe the mental illness that he suffers from somehow is triggered by certain types of music, rap being one of them. I don't know. But I mean, womp womps to him. I mean, as time goes on, I'll learn more about this alleged mental illness that he may or may not have. But I feel like it's crazy. And I'm really hoping that this is the community in which, you know, Elijah is from. I mean, I've been seeing a lot of, you know, protests. People are, you know, the hashtag thing is up again. But I really hope that there's some sort of peace that's brought to the family of this guy. I mean, it's hard, meaning Elijah. It's hard to say, you know, I don't know. I'm just so weirded out by this. I kind of have nothing more to say. Because I just find this to just be this is like wanton disregard for life. And it's disgusting. And it angers me as a black person living in this community that our lives are just that much, I don't know, we're just less than, that it's okay for somebody to just feel like, I don't like the music that you're playing. Let me just kill you. Let me murder you in such a violent way by slitting your throat. Like, how is this possible? Like, how is this okay? Like, how? It just doesn't make any sense to me. So that's the womp womp of this week. All right, everyone. I am here with my very special guest, Emmanuel Depa. Emmanuel, say hello.
All right. Good evening, everybody.
So, Emmanuel and I have known each other for several years now. It's been since, like, what, 2000, was it 10, 11? I don't know.
Somewhere in that ballpark. Somewhere around 2012.
Yeah, 2012. And yeah. I met Emmanuel through the Haitian American Lawyers Association of New York. And that was when it was first coming together, right? You were actually the first president of that organization.
That's right. I was part of the founding officers back in 2013. And funny story how that came about. I actually heard about the incorporation of Helani through a good friend, Stephanie Delia. She's also a former, she's also an immigration attorney. Mm-hmm. She told me about the meeting. I went down to the meeting, saw about 15 people there. And then we had an election. And, you know, we had to submit videos and speeches and so on and so forth. And you know me, I have a little videography background. So I put together the best 3-minute video you can find, you know, you can put together, and had a nice speech. And then I was the first president.
Yes. Yeah. So I remember the first time I went to, I guess, a mixer. I guess that first members mixer, like the coming out party or whatever of Helani. Right. And I thought that one, like, oh, this is pretty cool. At that point, you know, I was newly minted as an attorney. And then it was really because of you that I ended up really becoming involved in the organization. I think the second year there were elections and you sent me a text like, hey, you want to be part of the executive team?
Yeah, you got to get involved.
And it's crazy because if you didn't send me the text, I would have never thought to even do it. I was like, oh, this is just an organization. I'll support. It's cool. I'll be in the background. But it was your text message like, hey, I think you should join the executive team that got me there. And then I think I had, I was elected as vice president, and then I became president elect the following year that I became president. And then I was on the board. So I was part of Helani, like as a executive board and board member for, like, I don't know, like a 5-year period.
Yeah. Thank you. I'll take the credit.
I mean, to tell you the truth, but, like I said, it was you. So
yeah. But you know, that was actually the role that I had to play. You know, as first president, you know, it was more marketer in chief. You know, I had to get the name of the organization out there. So I reached out to all my contacts. We put on a bunch of different events to just attract different types of attorneys and different types of people from the community. The event that you were talking about, that was August 14th, 2013, I believe. That was the launch event.
Okay.
I remember Assemblywoman, she was then district leader. She was there. Matthew Eugene was there in support. Dwayne Paul, who I didn't, you know, who knew she would be a judge? She was there. Several other attorneys were there. But yeah, that kicked everything off. The website was launched at that point, and we were live.
Yeah. And yeah, it's been, you know, kicking since then, really. We're in our, like, what, sixth year now, I think? Seventh year? I don't know. One of those two.
Yeah, it's hard to do the counting, but in 2013 to 2019.
To now. So that is how, everyone, I encountered the fabulous Emmanuel Depa. And so, Emmanuel, if you could just tell us a little bit about yourself, like, you know, we know that you're an attorney by way of this conversation, that you were involved in the Haitian American Lawyer Association, but you're a solo practitioner out here in these streets, right? So talk to us a little bit about what your practice areas are and what you do.
Sure. So, you know, that's it's hard to articulate it, but I guess in terms of practice areas, my areas are immigration, divorce, and criminal. And, I'm also in the family court. Those are the areas that I practice that pay the bills, and it falls under, you know, the family aspect.
Okay.
I practice family-based immigration. So I help people come into the country, and I, you know, prevent them from getting deported as well. And that overlaps with getting divorced. Usually, sometimes families have to be dissolved. So then I divorce them. And then sometimes members of the family get arrested. So I represent members of the family. So it's kind of hard to actually say to pigeonhole me. I'm pretty general. I can do a lot. Outside of those main areas, I do practice entertainment, and business development. So I work with a lot of young startup businesses and a few celebrities here and there, do some contract negotiations, do some trademark and copyright work. Okay. But that's more of a passion, so.
Okay. So you're like a jack of all trades out here in these legal streets.
Yeah, they say that's not a good thing, but I feel like I've had ADD my whole life. So why change now,
I mean, no, you're totally right when it comes to that. I mean, for me, I started off in the criminal world and then I got into labor law. But then starting my business, I kind of got into the business development as well, trademarking, like IP world. But it's interesting, yourself, you're a Haitian American. When you are, Caribbean descent and you're an attorney, you become like the community lawyer. So you end up practicing everything, even if you don't practice everything.
Correct. Because right now, I got roped into, a few landlord-tenant cases.
Yeah.
That's not my lane at all. But, the people, they needed help and I couldn't say no.
Yeah. And the thing is, we go to law school to, to become like thinkers in a sense. We don't go to law school to specialize in any particular area. We learn skills to help us, get into whatever we need to get into. So I think that's, sometimes a good point to make. Some people are like, oh, well, you don't practice this. What's like it's, I'm a trained attorney. I can figure out anything.
Yeah. And in the way my practice has, different ebbs and flows. Some parts of the year, I'll be heavy doing adjustments. Other parts of the year, I'll be doing a lot of deportation defense. Mm-hmm. It looks like this summer, my divorce practice is going to be pretty busy.
Oh, wow.
As I have to do a lot of motions. So I prefer to do a lot of areas. It keeps me, entertained and so.
And keep your pockets lined. Keep your pockets lined too. That's important.
I guess so. When this gets slow, I'll do this. So, yeah.
Now you're seeing that divorce is popping this summer. I've heard these statistics out there, like 50% of marriages end up in divorce. I mean, is that, would you agree with that?
50%. I would actually disagree with that. I think it's a lot more than that.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Just from my personal experience, I think I have two friends left that are married. So
mercy.
Yeah.
And I can't even lie. Like I would probably say at least once a year I have somebody that I know getting divorced. So I don't know. But hey, at least I guess the upside for you is that you're making money, right?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, divorce is good.
If that's your field, it's good for that. So now I know from our interactions, you are very heavy in the immigration world. And so, recently, there was a lot of news around President Trump's recent tweet about, immigration and, people needing to go back to, deporting people. And so there was a CNN article that was talking about how this tweet basically, prompted ICE to start another round of deportations in major cities like Chicago, LA, New York City, etc. But after this article came out a couple of weeks ago, I haven't really heard much about what's been going on with that. Like, is there anything you can speak on with respect to ICE and the, deportations and like more so about like what's going on now? It's like with immigration, it's either hot or cold. But it's still, in your line of work, that it's always happening. So like, if you could just shed some light about that.
Yeah, sure. So, President Trump did, send out a tweet that, made a lot of people nervous. Executing the tweet is, pretty impossible. I don't think there are enough ICE officers and enough holding facilities right now to deport everybody. If they're going to do a large raid, that's normal. You know, large raids happen all the time, and, you know, sometimes hundreds of people are apprehended. But to speculate on what the administration is doing, I think this is all part of his deterrence plan. President Trump has a plan, and he has been executing it despite everybody's complaints. Mm-hmm. I think he his initial goal was to make coming to America difficult and unattractive. Mm-hmm. And the crisis at the border, I believe he's gotten his point across that people are not welcome.
Yeah.
That under the Obama administration, you know, you would just come to the border, say, hey, I'm afraid to go back. You know, not necessarily. I have plenty of clients who didn't even say that much and they were allowed into the country. Mm-hmm. You know, and once you're allowed into the country, you know, you figure your way out while you're in deportation proceedings to get a green card. And most people do. And some people just don't even go to court. Mm-hmm. Trump said, you know what, this this welcoming policy is doing a lot of damage to the country. The system is broken because the asylum system is broken. And as an immigration attorney, I, you know, it's a little, you know, I got to say the system is actually broken. Mm-hmm. I get several clients who don't even understand what political asylum is. They just think it's a path to getting a work authorization card. Mm-hmm. They come up with stories. And I'm not saying stories that, you know, their circumstances aren't aligned with what the statute reads at, you know, asylum, mm-hmm. political asylum is when you're persecuted by the country because of your race, religion, you know, membership to a particular social group, your political beliefs, you know, your sex, you know, things along the line. So a lot of times people are fleeing economic difficulties. So that's why you've seen an influx of people claiming asylum at the border. Mm-hmm. I believe I saw a statistic the other day. It nearly doubled in the past few years. I'm not going to throw out any numbers, but except for that, but there are twice as many people applying for asylum now as under Obama. Mm-hmm. You know, why they're rushing to the border? Because I feel like they think the door is going to close.
Yeah.
At some point, people are just not going to be able to even come up here. You know, he's worked out certain deals with Mexico where Mexico has to use his National Guard to stop, you know, so he's doing a lot of things. I don't necessarily approve of some of his tactics, but as far as executing what he wanted to do, he is actually doing it.
Now, what
it's unfortunate.
What is the drama with the children in cages? You know, that's been the hashtag, that's been the post, that's been a lot of the conversation, especially with a lot of like civil rights group, human rights groups, about the children who are being detained in these detention centers, namely in Miami. Like what's really going on with that? Like what's your take on that?
Well, the children in cages, I have not visited, so I can't tell you for sure. But yeah, there have been reports of children in cages. You know, customs has denied, you know, certain things like that. And, you know, denied people drinking out of toilets and denied all of these, you know, a lot of the greatest, mm-hmm. you know, outlandish allegations. I don't want to, you know, say the crazy. But, it is hard to believe people are drinking out of toilets. But, hey, it probably is happening. I'm sure, you know, there's a lot of xenophobia amongst the customs agents as well. Mm-hmm. If the children are in cages, they certainly shouldn't be in cages. You know, the Flores Agreement. You know, a lot of these children should be released. The government is botching that. Mm-hmm. It's probably, you know, it's the humanitarian crisis going on.
But what typically happens, like, again, because a lot of people, you know, really get their news from social media and, you know, whatever internet, I guess, outlets. But in terms of, you know, these children ending up in cages, is it basically, you know, the family, I guess, is picked up and they send the parents back and keep the kids? Like, how is that even happening?
Honestly, I couldn't even tell you. I know right now when Jeff Sessions was the attorney general, he criminalized crossing the border illegally. Mm-hmm. Before, it was just a civil penalty. Before Jeff Sessions, adults and children would be separated if the adults, if they believed the adults were not their biological parents.
Okay.
So they would actually separate the adults from the children under the Obama administration for the safety of the children, because if they believed that these certain adults were actually coyotes trafficking these children in. Under Jeff Sessions, He criminalized that. He criminalized parents who couldn't prove, you know, that those were their, you know, the children. So if they lost birth certificates or anything like that, then they just arrested these parents. And, you know, and they're charging them with criminal matters, and the children are then separated. And, you know, there's a Flores agreement that says the children are supposed to be released within 20 days. You know, but when the parents are going through legal proceedings, it's, you know, complicates things.
And I guess, yeah.
That agreement is probably going to be revisited at some point, because this crisis, there's a lot of money in this crisis, you know, a lot of privatization of these, you know, detention centers now. Clearly, the government facilities were not adequate to hold that many people, yet alone children. So there's big business in this. So I suspect, you know, this incarceration is going to continue.
Yeah, it's not going to go away anytime soon.
Yeah. I don't think so. And not only that, then, you know, you got some division amongst Democrats now. Trump is so, he's so good at what he's doing. He's dividing the Democrats now. You know, AOC is battling Nancy Pelosi, you know, for that funding, that emergency funding a couple weeks ago. So, you know, it's kind of funny. It's like, hey, you're complaining that Trump kidnapped these kids, yet other people in your party are like, hey, let's give Trump more money. So he can improve the facilities for these kidnapped kids. You know, a lot of stuff's going on. A lot of funny stuff's going on.
So now, with respect to TPS, again, a lot of these terms, the temporary protective status, these are things that, you know, when it's hot, it's hot. So everybody's talking about TPS when it's hot. Right now, it doesn't seem to be a hot topic so much, meaning it's not like all over the news outlets, people aren't holding forums to educate people on TPS. Like, so what's going on, particularly with the Haitians, I guess, since that's really the community we speak to for the most part, what's the status on the TPS talk?
Well, TPS, you know, was originally supposed to expire this month, actually. But, you know, the lawsuit, you know, which alleged that the Trump administration's decision to terminate it was arbitrary and capricious, meaning that they just said, hey, we're just going to terminate on the whim. You know, they never did their actual due diligence. And the plaintiffs were able to show a lot of influence by the Trump administration to, you know, alter or misrepresent the conditions on the ground at the time, you know. You know, I can just tell you that a flyover was never done of the island. You know, when Secretary Kelly, I believe at the time he was DHS Kelly still. He was head of DHS. He, you know, there was no flyover of the island. So, and the decision came shortly after that. Elaine Duke, acting Secretary Elaine Duke, I believe she had gotten emails to, you know, misrepresent certain things. You know, don't quote me. I may be, you know, maybe a little factually wrong there, but ultimately the U.S. government didn't do its due diligence. So they were basically sent back to the drawing board. As a result, you know, there is, I guess, what you would call an injunction or a stay on the termination date. So there's an automatic extension going until next year. So we'll hear something soon.
Now, in your opinion, again, not necessarily, I mean, this is just from your experience, do you think that there will actually be a point in time where there will be, you know, a final decision that would result in individuals being deported back to Haiti with regards to this TPS thing?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the last part of the question? Reported back to Haiti?
Yeah. So basically what I'm wanting to know, I mean, there's been these extensions, extension after extension after extension. At some point, do you think that the Haitians will then, you know, who were here, I guess, on TPS that got expired or whatever the case is, that they will be deported back to Haiti? Do you think that ultimately a deportation will take place?
Yeah, there's going to be some Haitians that get deported, you know, probably because they won't be eligible for the pathway. I think ultimately what's going to happen, Trump has been holding this as a negotiation, you know, leverage. The DACA and TPS, that's 11 million people right there.
Yeah.
You know, he has you know, the rest of their lives in his hand, and he can decide to keep them here. Right now, he's dangling them so he can get what he wants as leverage. What does Trump want, you ask?
The wall. Yeah.
That's not it. That's actually a distraction. Believe it or not, that's a distraction.
So what do you think he wants?
He wants to eliminate family-based immigration, exactly what I practice. Mm-hmm. Not eliminate it, but he wants to limit it. So right
the chain migration? Is that what?
Yes. Okay. Yes. He's already rebranded as chain migration. So right now you can petition for, you know, family as defined under immigration law is your parents, your spouse, your siblings, and your children. Mm-hmm. Right. So depending on what your status is, you can apply for one of those people and, you know, whether, you know, they can either be immediate relatives and they can come quickly or they can be on a waiting list and take, you know, years. But either way, he wants to eliminate the siblings and he wants to eliminate the parents. Mm. Okay. So, and the children, I'm not too sure, don't quote me on the children over 21, but that may be something he's looking to eliminate also.
I mean, he's coming for everybody, so.
He wants to get rid of what's called the lottery visa. So the lottery visa is an opportunity for people from countries that are not represented in the United States to have a chance to come here on a lottery, you know, because aside from that, you need a family member to come here.
Yeah.
Right. So if you don't have a family member here, so these countries that lacking family members, they do the lottery. So he's trying to eliminate that altogether. So and he's trying to implement what's called a merit based system where. It's like going to the DMV. You have to accrue a certain amount of points so you can get your ticket here. You know, I believe there's a simulated test and I took it and I just got a 31 out of, you know, and I think the score was 30 was the threshold to come here. And I got a 31. You know, mind you, I have a law degree. I speak English, you know, so, you know, those are some of the things that allows you to get points, speaking English, having a certain level of education. So what's going to happen is you're not going to get people from third world countries coming here that specifically do not speak English. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have less Haitian people coming here, not necessarily because of education, probably because of the English.
Yeah.
So if you're not English speaking country, you already have a disadvantage. Mm. He's also been looking to change the public charge, the definition of the public charge. Under immigration law, if you were likely to become a public charge, they wouldn't let you in. But immigration had certain mechanisms that would test out that theory, you know, and they would have people do what's called an affidavit of support, basically a promise to support you. That has been a lot more difficult. Now, this administration wants to make it where if you're likely to become a public charge because of your age, they basically created like 15 different factors where they can deny you admission because they think you're going to be a public charge. Mm-hmm. So, they're looking to make legal immigration difficult. They're looking to change the face of immigration.
Yeah.
So they can keep the number of Democrats and Republicans either at the same, because right now, everybody that comes through that border is going to be a blue Democrat within you know, 5 years when they become American. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, I find it to be, you know, it's very interesting because I've, you know, seen the reports and seen the posts with respect to Trump. I think they had like a whole family tree on him and how his, like, I don't know, his great, great grandmother or whatever came from, I think it was Eastern European as a maid. And then she brought in her sister or her mother and his wife, who can barely speak English, in my opinion, who brought her parents over and whatnot and essentially, you know, I guess, performed the chain migration that Trump is so vehemently against. It's really interesting how, I guess, you know, if it works for them, great, but then for everyone else. So it's, for me, I'm like, I feel like he's okay with, you know, people from the UK, people from Eastern Europe, maybe, and like basically white people migrating to the United States. But when it comes to the black and brown, he's not so keen on that. And I think that that's why a lot of these policies are really being put into place to kind of prevent the blacks and browns. So more of his racist rhetoric.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. That sums it up.
It's crazy.
Yeah, he's trying to change the face. He wants people from the Netherlands.
Yeah, exactly. He's okay with people from Denmark coming over, but he's not okay with people from like Trinidad coming over. So,
correct.
So you do a lot. So I, like I said, I know that immigration is a big piece of what you do. So you're in solo practice. Like, where is your office? Where can people find you if they, you know, if they need assistance?
Now I'm on Broadway.
I mean, I know you. I know you leveled up, but you know, I wanted you to let the people know.
All right. So I'm located at 305 Broadway. I'm on the 7th floor. I'm actually directly across the street from 26 Federal Plaza Immigration.
Okay. So he's in the city now, guys.
Yeah, man.
Now, is there an email address, a phone number that you're comfortable giving the people to contact you? You know, if they don't want to take the truck out there, they want to call you first or email you first?
Yeah, sure. Well, first of all, I don't do consultations by email.
Okay.
I do consultations over the phone. So if you contact me, it's to schedule a consultation.
Okay.
The email is lawyer@DePasLaw. That's my last name. DePas, D as in Delta, E as in Echo, P as in Papa, A as in Apple, S as in Sierra, law, LAW.com, DePasLaw.com. Phone number, you can reach me on the mobile phone, 347-470-9143.
Okay, cool. And so I know you before you had talked about entertainment. So then that's your passion. Talk a little bit about that. Like, what do you mean by entertainment being your passion? And aside from representing some celebrities and whatnot, like, where do you hope to go with your entertainment portion of your career?
I want to be as successful as Puff Daddy.
All right. You heard it first here on According to RP. And part of this success, I'm assuming you're also going to write me in to the payroll of some sort, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because I support the dream. I support the dream.
Yeah. See, you're versatile. You were a former DA. You've done labor. So, you know, a lot of these things might be labor related. So,
I mean, let me know. Everybody knows that if anybody who's like a Puff Daddy, a P. Diddy, a Sean Combs, he has like a million names. Like, those are the individuals that you stick by, because these people are the ones with the like with the real money. You know, he doesn't have to rap anymore. Why? Because he manages rappers. He has like his hand in so many different pots. Like, I would say he's like the true, I don't know, like the epitome of like celebrity in a sense, because he has all these, you know, his hand is all over the place.
Yeah.
Commercials, you know, cologne, like property, all this different types of
things. I'm trying to be like him. I even got behind, I'm on a board of an all-girls school.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you told me about that. That's right.
Yeah, we were pre-approved, but unfortunately Albany and, you know, Dems in Albany, they don't like charter schools.
And why do you think that is? Because I've heard a lot of the negativity around charter schools. To be honest, there's not like there are people who are like yeah, it's cool, but I'm hearing a lot of like pushback.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there are pros and cons to charter schools.
Mm-hmm.
What I can say about that is, I don't think options is never a bad thing.
Yeah.
You know, luckily for me, you know, before charter schools were around, you know, the New York City public school system they created like these special programs for children, you know, called SP, you know, or ALI. ALI was Advanced Learning Institute.
Mm-hmm.
And in Far Rockaway, in my schools, you know, myself and probably like 60 other kids were divided into two classes. We were literally separated from everybody else
mm-hmm.
in the school based on testing and so on and so forth. So I swear we went on different trips than other children. We were, you know, it was more of a custom program.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, every now and then, because of social media, I'll run into one of my former classmates, and I swear it's like everybody's a doctor or something of, you know, some type of professional.
Mm-hmm.
So I think customization is actually really important. Perhaps maybe there may be too many charter schools. And it, yes, it is taking away from the public schools.
Yeah.
But the charter school that I'm a part of, There is not an abundance of that. You know, I am a part of a charter school that is K through eight. There is only one other charter school, all girls school, I should say, all girls school, K through eight in Brooklyn. And if you live in East Flatbush, you have to travel almost 2 hours to get to school. You know, what little girl, that's not fair to a little girl. Yeah. You know, a lot of us in Brooklyn are from, you know, the Caribbean. And, you know, we've grown up in single gender schools in the Caribbean. And if you're a parent and you want to continue that same tradition, your kids got to go to school 2 hours away. So I think in certain circumstances, you know, very unique type of schools should be given some type of exception to the cap, because they clearly provide a benefit. You know, what got me involved with this, with an all girls charter school. And it's funny because when we were doing interviews with SUNY, you know, all of my other board members had kids, you know, I don't have children. I'm still practicing, you know? You know, so it was kind of awkward when it came to me, you know, but what behind me, you know, the reason I got behind it is because that I know that, well, I have seen from the evidence that single gender schools, girls that graduate from single gender schools are just generally more successful and avoid suspension. The suspension rate in an all-girls school is a lot less than a co-ed school. Mm-hmm. And everybody knows that suspension rate is directly correlated with the criminal justice system.
Yeah.
So that is what I saw. When I would go to downtown Brooklyn, I saw too many young girls in jail, you know, having to deal with cases. And through my research, I learned that this, you know, single gender schools is the best way to avoid that. So that's why I got behind it. Like I said, we were approved by SUNY, but there's a cap. Mm-hmm. We were actually ranked number 9 and they only had 7. So we just missed it. So right now, again, we're waiting for the speaker, Mr. Hasty, I believe his name is Carl Hasty, you know, get it going for us because we're ready. You know, we want to service the community down there in East Flatbush. You know, I'm sure there are plenty of girls that, you know, would excel.
Yeah.
At a single gender school.
Yeah. I mean, like for me, you know, I mean, I've always been in co-ed schools and I think there is a benefit to that. But I think that, you know your kid as a parent, right? You know your kid. Uh-huh. You know what you might want for your kid. Like I said, there's a tradition thing as well, too. A lot of times parents, you know, because of whatever they've experienced, they know that this might be a better, you know, a better vehicle for their girls. And I think that, you know, we see so much of a push of all boys schools. You can find an all boys school like on, you know, in every like section of Brooklyn almost, right?
Yeah.
Maybe. But it's interesting how that push for an all girls schools like haven't really, in my opinion, I haven't really seen it. I actually don't know of this other, you know, this other all girls school that's
in
Brooklyn.
It's called Excellence Girls. I believe it's in Bed-Stuy. Okay. Excellence Girls, yeah.
Yeah. I'm always hearing about Eagle Academy and all that.
You wanna know the interesting statistic about Excellence Girls? There are usually 200 students left on the waiting list that are not that can't go there.
Wow.
So what does that say? There's a need.
There's a need for it. There's a need for it.
You know, we were able to get support from a lot of the local politicians. I believe, you know, newly elected. She just won an election, then has had to run a primary. But, you know, Farrah Lewis was a big supporter of it. You know, so I hope moving forward, you know, perhaps, you know, somehow the message will get to the state that this is, you know, the need is really there. This is not one of these, you know, charter school, because there's a franchise that's going on, by the way. That's why, mm-hmm. you know, charter schools got a really bad name. Don't get me wrong. There are a lot of good schools. But this thing is like big business.
No, you know? It is. It is. Like everyone's starting a charter school.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. No,
you know,
they're like corporations. You know, the charter school that I'm behind, this is grassroots. This is there's about 7 or 8 of us on the board. And, you know, we're all in Brooklyn. You know, mm-hmm. we all have ties to Brooklyn. This is not some Fortune 500 company that's pumping money. You know, I think, you know, I'm not slandering anything. It's a good school, but Success Academy. There's like so many of them. You know, Kipps Academy, you know, they're all over the state. You know, these are like the big business, you know, charter schools. You know, we're actually a grassroots from the community, you know, type of organization. You know, so there's a difference in charter schools. They're not all the same.
They're not all bad. So for those people out there who are wondering whether or not to enroll your child in charter schools, I think the biggest takeaway from this is just do your research. Do your research, you know, visit the schools, talk to parents who have their kids in the schools, find out who's on the board. Like, really do research before you know, stick your kid in. Because I've had friends who've had their kids in Success Academy and they had to run and pull them out because of, you know, the structure. And it works for some people. And I always say that's why you have to do your research, because some kids thrive in schools like Success Academy, but others, because, you know, it's that whole customization piece, right? Every kid is wired differently. And and so that might not be their setting, you know? So, but that's good.
That's why options is important.
Yeah, options are important. So I really do hope that things work out for you guys with the charter school. So are you guys trying to bring it up again next year, or is there a window that you have to, like, a waiting period?
Well, actually, what happened is unprecedented. So there is actually no clarity on our timeline. Mm-hmm. All I know is that we are pre-approved. So if there is an opening of the window, you know, the cap, we're right in. But right now, there is no appetite in Albany.
So those of you who are listening, who are activists out here, especially those education activists who feel a particular way about charter schools and the fact that this is a all-female charter school that's trying to, you know, be established here in East Flatbush, then you guys know what to do. Start, you know, placing the phone calls to your local officials, maybe take a bus trip up to Albany, get together with Emmanuel there. You guys heard his, had his phone number and email address, and maybe let's take some action and get this done.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, then, Emmanuel, I think that this was a very productive conversation. I think people know a little bit more about you now. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, I think so.
And so, I mean, we talked about a lot of the things that you're doing and, you know, with entertainment, where you want to go. But I mean, is there anything brewing in the pot right now? Any exclusives that you want to drop on According to RP?
Not yet.
When you're ready to reveal it to the world, you know where to come.
Yes.
All right.
Definitely.
All right. So thank you so much, Emmanuel, for taking the time to, you know, educate us a little bit about the immigration world, talk to us about a little bit what you do and all of that. You could have been anywhere doing anything, but you're here with me.
All right. My pleasure.
All right. So, everyone, thank you for tuning in to another episode of According to RP on WJMS Radio. And it's a wrap, and I will talk to you guys next week.
You were listening to According to RP on WJMS Radio.
About time you tuned in.
Tune in each and every Thursday.
I can't wait to come back.
7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
It's all online.